Button. No.
Thank you, and may it please the court. My name is Brian Mullins. I represent Appellant Gene Sutton in this direct appeal from his judgment and conviction out of the Central District of Illinois. Unless the court has questions regarding the specific issues that were raised in the brief, I intend to focus on the overall question of harmless error and essentially why these issues matter, I believe. I think the case is atypical.
First need to establish error.
Well, of course, we are assuming that we have presented some error in the brief, and I think all of the issues are meritorious, obviously. But I think in a lot of drug cases, the evidence is so overwhelming that an issue like 404B may not have a lot of relevance overall. But I think in this case, this was an atypical drug prosecution for a federal drug prosecution in many ways. There were not dozens of witnesses coming forward saying that Mr. Sutton had conspired to distribute marijuana over a period of years. There were no wiretaps, there were no audio tapes, there were no videotapes.
But your client was caught red-handed and confessed.
Well, he confessed.
That seemed to help the prosecution.
Judge, he confessed, but he was not caught red-handed, actually. The only direct evidence of a drug transaction was done by Fred Smith, who was a confidential informant. And at trial, Fred Smith testified that he bought the marijuana from Gene Sutton Jr., who was my client's son. And no police officer witnessed this this transaction. The police officer who escorted Fred Smith to the residence was about an eighth of a mile away, I believe. And he testified that he saw Mr. Smith buy the marijuana from a black male, but he could not identify the black male as either Gene Sutton Jr. or Senior. So I think in many ways the evidence was, I mean, this is not a case of overwhelming evidence against Mr. Sutton. Mr. Sutton testified that he was in Kankakee on the day that Mr. Smith bought the marijuana from his son, that Mr. Sutton did not know that his son was selling marijuana out of the residence, and he had no knowledge that Mr. Smith was buying marijuana from the residence. And I think that is not incredible, given that this is a residence that is a farm. It's not a
how
single...
How old is the son?
Pardon?
How old is the son?
I'm sorry?
How old is the son?
I believe he is in his early 20s. So he is a grown man. And this was a farm. This is a large property where they were growing corn. There were several buildings on the property. There were several cars on the property because Mr. Sutton is a mechanic. So I think that it is not incredible that Mr. Sutton did not know this was going on, and that was the evidence that was presented. Now, his confession, I think, is very understandable given the circumstances in which it was given. The confession was made while Mr. Sutton was handcuffed, and his two children were also in police custody. While the police were searching the residence, Mr. Sutton understandably did not want his sons to face potential trouble, and he took it upon himself to take responsibility for anything that was found on the property. And I think the fact that that Mr. Sutton Jr. could be seen as liable or guilty in this case is certainly shown by the fact that the government was willing to enter into a plea with Mr. Sutton Jr., whereby Mr. Sutton Jr. would plead out to possessing 49 kilograms of marijuana. Mr. Sutton Sr. would then plead out to 1 kilogram, and he would essentially have gotten time served if Mr. Sutton Jr. was willing to do that. He ultimately was not, and the case proceeded to trial. But I think that shows that this is a case of where there's not overwhelming evidence against Mr. Sutton Sr., and any error that the court might find is has some relevance, I think, and it's not a case of harmless error. If I may just briefly touch on the issue of whether the government proved that the substances were in fact marijuana, I think we make a twofold argument in that respect. First, we are asking the court to maybe reconsider some of its prior decisions, specifically the Warnock and Lupo decisions. I believe the Warnock decision is worth reconsidering because the court in Warnock said that a jury brings a common understanding of what is marijuana to a trial, and that common understanding is something that should be given respect. But I think the federal statute does not define marijuana with a common understanding. The federal statute has a very specific definition of what marijuana is and actually excludes certain types of marijuana or certain parts of a marijuana plant that I think most people would consider to be marijuana, but because that plant, the parts of that plant do not contain THC, I believe, that is why they were excluded. So,
is it your position that all the evidence shows in this case is that the roots of the plant were possessed or sold?
I think the evidence is inconclusive as to what part of the plant, if or even what kind of plant it was. There was just no evidence presented
There was certainly evidence presented. There were people who identified this plant as marijuana. Would you have any doubt if somebody identified a substance as peanut butter that that was sufficient to allow a jury to conclude that it was peanut butter without a chemical analysis?
No, I
don't know. If you look at the FDA rules, there are pretty elaborate definitions of what peanut butter is.
Very true.
One of the glories of the federal government, peanut butter rules.
Very true, but I think, I mean, Congress has given a very specific definition to marijuana in this case, and or in the statute, and it is something that I think any person facing a federal prosecution for possessing marijuana or distributing marijuana is at least entitled to a finding that the substance in question meets the statutory definition.
Yeah, well, the finding is based on the testimony that I saw this, and sure enough, it was marijuana. Let me put this question differently. Are there other plants that look very much like marijuana and are easily confused with it?
I believe there are. I think oregano is one, which is often confused with marijuana. I know there are cases where police officers have seen oregano growing and have attempted to obtain search warrants based on that, and in fact it was oregano. Now, marijuana has a distinctive smell, but I think there you fall into the stalks of the marijuana plant. I think the stalks of the plant, I would assume, smell the same as the leaves of the plant. And I think that's the problem in this case, is that there was no expert finding that what was discovered were not just the stalks of the plant, which are excluded by the statute.
The defense isn't precluded from establishing it was stalks.
No. No. And the defense admittedly did not produce its own expert witness. And Lupo, I think, is worth reconsidering because...
Understandable. It didn't appear to be part of the defense that this was not...
Well, the defense did refer to ditchweed, and there was some cross-examination of the expert and some of the officers regarding whether they were familiar with ditchweed. And one of the officers testified that, yes, ditchweed is something that grows wild in this area. And as whether that is something that, you know, whether those ditchweed contains THC, I think it probably does, but... whether those are primarily stalks or of the ditchweed, I think it was something that was raised, at least implicitly. And Lupo, I think, is worth reconsidering because Lupo was based on Judge Bazelon's decision in Walton, which I think is a very well-reasoned decision, but I think it's a decision that was probably is well-reasoned if you're a legislator as to why all forms of cannabis should be made illegal. But I think this was perhaps an area that the judiciary was not, it should not be getting into. Essentially, Judge Bazelon, I believe, was legislating from the bench in that case and rewriting the statute.
And not the first time for him.
No, very true. I see that I'm in my rebuttal time, so I will reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal.
Thank you, Mr. Mellon. Mr. Hoff.
May it please the court, Dave Hospice, United States Attorney from Urbana, first addressing the issue of the identity of the marijuana. The identity and nature of the substance of the marijuana was never challenged at all during the trial. The defendant at the house admitted, in fact, that all the marijuana was his on numerous occasions. The defense in their opening statement said that you will see the marijuana, however we denied the marijuana belonged to the defendant, it belonged to someone else. The officers that testified, Thomas Fitz has testified, he is an experienced police officer who has done over 100 cannabis cases personally. He personally identified the exhibits that were seized in one of the cars and also in the crawl space as being marijuana. He also commented on the smell of the marijuana as he opened the area to the crawl space and was overwhelmed by the marijuana odor itself. Corporal Kerwick, who heads the KMEG task force team, has been involved in hundreds of search warrants as well, also identified the marijuana that he sees in one of the other vehicles. And then he also did see the marijuana and identified as marijuana the marijuana that Officer Fitz saw in one of the cars. Then Officer Kerwick goes to the defendant and starts to mention the marijuana, and that's when the defendant interrupts and says, all the marijuana is mine. My children have nothing to do with it. We believe that the evidence was sufficient for a finding of guilty by the jury on that point. It certainly was not challenged by the defense at all during the trial. There could have been cross-examination during the trial on all the issues or any of the issues now raised for the first time on appeal. It was not raised at the post-trial motions, and it was not raised at the time of close of the evidence.
Given the nature of the trial, what was the point of the prior conviction? See, I could understand the use of the prior if the defendant were saying, this wasn't marijuana, or I didn't know this was marijuana. Then you introduce the prior and say, this fellow very much knows what marijuana is.
The purpose.
I can't see what the function of this was, given the way the trial actually developed.
The purpose of the 404B evidence in this case was, the defendant was trying to claim, yes, I lived there. Yes, there's marijuana stored in vehicles. Yes, there's marijuana drying. Yes, there's marijuana in a crawl space. I didn't know any of that marijuana was there. I have no way to know marijuana is there. I have nothing to do with anything like that. So we came back in and said, well, wait a minute. In 1986, the same police officer...
The fact that he was convicted before showed that he knew there was marijuana now, other than by use of the propensity inference, the very thing that's forbidden.
It goes to the plan and method, because he's trying to claim he has no knowledge of the storage.
Plan and method? This was not a distinct M.O. This is not your polka dot handkerchief case.
This is the plan M.O. in this case was that the marijuana was not stored in the house, it was stored in vehicles, so that in the event that it was seized, the defendant could say, I had no knowledge that there was marijuana in those vehicles. In 1986, he was storing the same marijuana in a vehicle. In 1992, he was storing cannabis on the property. In 1992, he had cocaine and firearms stored in vehicles. In 1992, he did undercover cocaine purchases. The court sifted through all the 1992 evidence and sifted through the 1986 evidence and said that the court felt that the 1986 evidence was more probative and relevant than the 1992 storage and possession of marijuana, and only allowed us to introduce the 1986 possession, and were not allowed to introduce the fact that the defendant was convicted of that offense. The court said you cannot use the conviction, you can only use the fact that the defendant stored it on the property, as the court said, to show motive, plan, and intent, all of which are permissible under 404B. So we think the court conducted the proper sifting analysis, and this isn't an isolated case where at one time a defendant had possessed marijuana. It shows a continuing pattern of 86, 92, 2000, and the court says, no, I think in fairness, I am going to limit the 404B evidence solely to the 1986 one, to which he did plead guilty to the same exact crime, possession with intent to distribute. The defendant, during his testimony, acknowledged he pled guilty to that on his own, not through any questioning by us, and acknowledged he pled guilty to that because, in fact, he was guilty of that. If the court has any other questions on these issues, if not, I would ask that the judgment be affirmed and we'll sit down.
Thank you, Mr. Hoff.
Thank you.
Mr. Mullen?
Let me just briefly return to the issue of the marijuana and proving that it was, in fact, marijuana. I don't think, actually, this court needs to overturn either Lupo or Warnock to reverse this conviction on that issue, because I think Lupo at least requires an expert to testify that the substance contains THC, and here no expert did that. The expert only testified as to the weight of the substance. And I think in a federal prosecution, you at least have to have an expert testifying that the substance in question contains THC. Unless there are any other questions.
But when he testified to the weight, his testimony didn't encompass testifying to the weight of a prohibited substance?
It was, I think, assumed by the government that I think the question was, what did the substance weigh? What did the marijuana
right.
weigh?
Right.
And admittedly, there was no...
And the cross didn't...
Correct.
Didn't
correct.
That.
Correct. And that, admittedly, is a problem with our argument.
Right.
But unless there are any other further questions, we ask that this conviction be reversed and remanded for a new trial.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Mullen.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Huff. According to the sixth case taken.